Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey. Welcome to a special edition of Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. I'm Dan Hurst. And on these special editions, we talk to, people that we consider to be special guests. Mm-hmm. And we talk about things that that they have some interest in and knowledge of and have researched. And we think that it's important for you to hear what these people have to say. And today we're talking to Jared Wilson, who is the assistant professor of pastoral ministry. And he's at Midwestern Seminary, where we are, as a matter of fact.
We are.
In the Spurgeon Library. And somebody keeps telling us to shh.
I know. Yeah. That's what happens when you do a podcast in the library. They tell you to be quiet.
He's also the director of a pastoral training center at the Liberty Baptist Church in Kansas City. And it's interesting because Jared's one of these guys that has a lot of interests. And we were just talking a while ago. There is a place, a platform, where you can listen to music, all different kinds of music. It's a satellite format. And he was just talking about how he loved to listen to Channel 5 for 50s and Channel 6 for 60s mm-hmm. and Channel 7 for 70s.
Right.
And you got to talking about the nostalgia that we listen to music because it brings back our past.
I was listening last night. I was going around and I came across Ambrosia, not the salad, but the group. And in 1980. And remember, in 1980, I was at Jewel. I was at William mm-hmm. Jewell, right? I was one of the two Christians at Jewel in that year. And I was the director of the radio station. And so in the summer, I would go out there and we'd play all the hits. And Ambrosia had like four hits in the summer, right? And that was the height of my life.
And you couldn't tell them apart.
No, you couldn't tell them apart. But, you know, my life has been downhill ever since 1980. But I peaked in 1980. And so just last night, man, it was about 11:30 at night. Jill's already in bed. I was just up doing some stuff, and I was just going through some music on the internet and came across Ambrosia. And I'm serious about this. I just sat down with the headphones on and closed my eyes, and I mean instantly, it's 1980, and I'm 140 pounds. You know, I got it going on. I got three or four girls on the line. I'm thinking, life is sweet, you know? I mean, I'm serious about that. I was immediately transported back there, and I didn't feel 64 years old. I really didn't. Man, nostalgia is great.
Oh, it is great.
For a
minute. And that's what we need to talk about today. So
yes.
Please welcome Jared Wilson. Mark, you know so much about nostalgia also, so this should be an interesting conversation.
Well, I am nostalgia.
And walking nostalgia.
I know. Yeah. No, thank you, Jared, for being here. Walking nostalgia. Walking Matilda.
I got the walking nostalgia and the boogie woogie flute.
That'd be good. Man, you wrote a blog some time ago that I read that just resonated with me about nostalgia. Our friend Ed Stetzer one time said, nostalgia is a cul-de-sac. It doesn't lead you anywhere. Or at least somebody said it, and Ed quoted it, one or the other. But
you know, I have a nostalgia for cul-de-sacs.
Do you really?
I do, because I lived on a couple. And they're nice.
Americana.
It's like your own little cloistered street. Like, this street is ours. Not, you don't pass through here. This is where you play soccer.
There you go. I love it. Yeah. But one of the biggest dangers of dying and declining churches is their love of nostalgia. In fact, we often say that Satan has made nostalgia an idol in their life, and they've traded Jesus for the church as they know it and the nostalgia. Because it is so compelling. So help us with that.
Yeah. Well, why do you think it's so attractive? I'm going to turn that question on you, because I've thought about this a lot. I have nostalgia for times that I didn't live in.
Really?
And I think it was put in me. So I was born in 75, so I'm a child late 70s, through the, you know, I'm a child of the 80s, essentially.
Right.
In the 1980s, there were so many teen movies, so movies marketed towards at least, you know, tween age years, you know, marketed to kids,
mm-hmm.
that took place in the 1950s.
Yes.
So many teen comedies. And the chief one is Back to the Future, of course. But so many. And so I've thought about this a lot. Why were there so many teen movies
uh-huh.
in the 80s that took place in the 50s?
Right.
And I think it's because the people making the movies were kids in the 1950s.
Exactly.
Those were the adults who were greenlighting the movies, and they had a nostalgia. But what it did for people, for Gen Xers like me, is it gave us a nostalgia for the 1950s.
Uh-huh.
So now I love the 50s and 60s, and I love all the music and everything. Well, my kids,
uh-huh.
you know, my oldest was born in 2001. they have a nostalgia for the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't live in the 90s, but they love 90s stuff. They look up 90s memes and all these things. And I just wonder about that. Like, it's not just that we have a nostalgia for our own time.
Right.
We just love nostalgia.
Yeah.
And so I've asked myself, well, what is the attractant there? I think it has something to do with things feel simpler. They really weren't. When you live through these times, they're not really any simpler than
– No.
But what we see, the media produced, gives us this idyllic kind of time, I think. I was thinking about this last night. I was thinking about The Goonies last night, which came out, I think, 85 or 86, something like that. Came out when I was a kid. I was the age of the kids in the movies.
Right.
And what it captured was a time – so I was a latchkey kid for a time, right? Mm-hmm. Now that like almost doesn't exist.
Right.
So there was a time where you would leave in the morning, especially during the summer, and maybe your mom yells for you at lunchtime, but you don't come home until the sun's going down. You're out on your bike. You're with your friends. You're building things in the woods. You know, you're getting in trouble. You're getting in fights. You're doing – you live a whole life in a day. Like, that doesn't exist anymore. And the Goonies sort of captures that. These kids who go on this, you know, pirate adventure or treasure adventure, I think it captures like a sense of childhood. And I think that's what nostalgia does. It projects the idea of something that's simpler than what we're facing.
Right.
So if you're translating into church world, oh, I remember when things were good, but we're not remembering – there were just as many challenges and there were just as many, you know, obstacles, but we just remember the good times and we think that makes it better than what we're facing now because we're trying to avoid the challenge of today.
And I think, too, when you talk about nostalgia, you go back like I was talking about 1980. I go back to that. You know, I know how it turns out between 1980 and today, but – for today, I don't know how tomorrow's going to turn out or next week. That uncertainty of the future is frightening. Whereas in 1980, it might not have been a great future, but I know where it came to. I know I'm here now. So it's like that was a safe time to go back and think about the future. When you think about all that's going on today, it seems very uncertain. I've got kids and grandkids I'm worried about. I got the world I'm worried about. I got my church I'm worried about. But I could go back to those days, and I can just get lost in nostalgia for a while. And it seems simpler. Mm. It seems less complicated. Life is really complicated, especially for older adults, many of whom are in our dying churches. It's hard for them to make a phone call, to use an iPhone. I mean, everything we talk about all the time is so different from what they understood and experienced. And so they can walk into church and they're surrounded by things that are so incredibly familiar and seem comforting. And they really become an idol in their life. And you know it's a false idol if you're afraid of losing it, and they're scared to death that you're going to take the pews away or remove something. But and we are totally hung up on nostalgia. We're a very nostalgic culture, right?
Yeah. Well, if you ever wondered, you know, when you're a kid and you walk into grandma's house and it never changes for 40 years, you know, they put maybe plastic over the couch so it doesn't get dingy or anything. But the you know, people over the age of such and such don't remodel their homes, you know. You know, grandma, it's a time capsule. Well, it's not just – I mean, it happens to all of us, right? Your favorite music is usually the music that you enjoyed when you were in your 20s. It's probably where it tops out, teenage years into 20s. And that's just – you press freeze. That's your favorite music forever. I think it's a similar thing. But at the same time, I think it's just what you described for older folks. The world is changing so quickly and so fast. And it doesn't value them as important people in society. Everything is geared towards youth and young people. So home is the one place I know like it's going to be the same. It's static. It's a comfort. And I think it's just very easy to translate that over to church as well. Right. Like church is the place where I feel at home. It's the place where God accepts me. And I don't want it to be different. It needs to be – I don't even think it's necessarily – I don't think it starts as a place of sinful stubbornness.
No.
I think it starts as a place of just comfort. Everything else is around my feet. The sands are shifting, and here's the one place I can go. And I think there's even a theological basis for that. God doesn't change,
right?
And this is the place I can go, and it's comfortable.
It doesn't change.
I can slow down. And obviously the problem arises when things need to change, as things do. And as a church grows, it can't help but change, and that's usually where the friction begins.
And if they're going to reach the neighborhood that has changed, they have to make some changes. Right. I think in the blog you said that, and it really resonated with me, nostalgia helps us escape the maladies of the moment.
Mm.
And
did I say that?
You did say
that's
that.
Pretty sweet.
And there's a
that's
lot
really
of
poetic.
There's a lot of maladies in the moment, right? And so these older saints can walk into that church building, and for a moment, they look at the the picture. I'm working in a church now that's getting ready to be adopted by another church within 2 weeks of this broadcast. And so I was there Wednesday night, and so they've gone in at the request of the adopting church and said, take whatever you want. Mm. And there was always there's the hall of fame of all the former pastors. And when I went in Wednesday night, they'd taken all those pictures out of the frames.
Wow.
They're going to save them, right, and put them somewhere. But, like, you know, all the change that's taking place is really hard for them, but they agreed to embrace it. So I think, again, I like what you said, that and that's what I was listening to Ambrosia, you know, I last night. I mean, for just a moment, I escaped all the challenges of this moment and went back to a time that just let me escape.
Well, our heart is attached to the past in ways that, like, the malady of the moment, if you're looking at a church change. So, I mean, just a personal example, like at my last church, it wasn't necessarily old people, but it was people who had children who had grown up in the youth group. So they were middle-aged, I suppose,
right.
You know, folks. And they were really struggling with the church growing. The church was growing numerically, which is what everybody says they want.
Right.
When you show up, they're expecting you to grow the church. Then it happens and they're mad at you, right? And they kept casting back to how the youth group was and what the – and, you know, trying to help them see, like, well, your kids aren't youth anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We can't recapture that. I'm sure it was a sweet moment. I'm sure it was a special time. But we can't keep saying when that happened or when that was going on. We have to actually grow beyond that. But I think for them it was a sweet moment when their kids were all home and together. There was a, you know, group of folks who their kids were all the same age, grew up together, were in youth group together. And it was a sweet kind of golden agey kind of experience for them. And I think that's good. I think that's sweet. But when you're hung up on it to try to avoid the discomfort of the change that you're facing now, you know, it's kind of like in Ecclesiastes where the teacher says in chapter 7, do not say, you know, the former days are not like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not wise, you know, to do that, right? You know, you're looking back to trying to live in the past, you know. So even the sweetness of that, I think it's an okay place to visit, right? Okay, did I put that in the blog post? It's a good place to visit, but not to live, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's nice to look back, to think back. I think this is what holidays do for us.
Absolutely.
But a holiday isn't every day,
right?
You know, it's a couple times, three times a year that you have these, you know, Christmas and Thanksgiving and Easter, where you kind of look back. But that's not the normal course of life, and so certainly in a church, like, you can't live in the past,
right? And looking back, as you said, it's a great place to visit, not a great place to live. But Paul tells us to forget those things, in a sense, which are behind, and look forward. Now he's talking about your sinful life, and I get all of that. But it's much easier for us as a church to look backward than to look forward.
Yeah.
Again, but not if you're looking forward in the hope of the gospel and the confidence of Christ.
Mm.
So if you were talking to a group of people who are in a church and their church is either going to die or they're going to have to make some significant changes. I mean significant changes.
Yeah.
The people who moved in around them are very different, perhaps even speak a different language, come from a different culture, all of that kind of stuff. And the church as they know it is going to have to cease to exist. How would you point them to a new future and a new hope and help them release the connection they have to the past and the comfort that is nostalgia?
Yeah.
How do you move them from a comfort that is nostalgia to really uncertain future, although it's not uncertain with Christ? How would you
– Yeah.
You got a few minutes with them. How would you explain that?
Well, I think the first thing I wouldn't do is denigrate their experience of the past. I think sometimes we run into trouble when we just think, oh, that's outdated or that's lame or that – you know, the way we talk about older tastes, older styles of music or whatever, or just styles of furniture – we have a disdain for that, and that's fine. We all have different tastes, but I think to begin with, if we're just like, well, that's not cool anymore, or that's stupid, or that's you're off on the wrong foot, right? Because you're essentially saying to those people whose heart is attached to those things, you're lame, you're uncool,
right.
You're not, you know. So you don't start there. I think you begin with what's the purpose of the church.
Mm-hmm.
So you can affirm someone's, you know, past experience. You can affirm the sweetness of their nostalgia and be grateful that the Lord worked in different ways before. But say, like, do you want this church to end? Is that what you want this story to be? Or, do you want the ministry of Christ to our neighbors now to be something that's vital? Do you care about lost people? I think coming back to the heart of what the church is about can kind of re-spark some interest in whatever the challenge may be. Oh, if we're going to reach our you know, our neighbors now, we're going to need some new methods maybe, or we're going to need, you know, a new package for this old message that we have. Those are things that I think you can get people to if you help them return to their first love, help them understand and be patient with them as well, for the reasons we, you know, just talked about earlier, right, the struggles that older folks have. I also think just appealing to the ongoing work of Christ in their life.
Yes.
I think sometimes for older folks, the reason they're attached to the older stuff is because that's when they were super active and had,
yes,
a lot of energy, and
yes,
they were vital in the church changing.
Yep.
And they feel like they're kind of being put out to pasture.
Yep.
That you're telling, you know, that they need to retire from the Christian life. And honestly, a lot of older believers and older churches kind of have retired from the Christian life in,
right,
some ways. Like, well, I did my time. Now it's your turn. You know, they just want to sort of coast out and to say, no, I mean, if you got breath in your lungs, you got a purpose. In life, in the kingdom, God can still use you. It may be in a different role, but we're not asking you to go sit on the bench. We need you to, you don't retire from the Christian life.
Right.
And so I think maybe even calling them to mentorship or to love or influence the younger generation. And I think giving them some roles to play, I think, helps as well.
And I think, too, nostalgia, as attractive as it is and as compelling as it can be for the reasons we've just talked about, your role as a pastor is to help them be attracted to a more greater beauty and a greater joy,
yeah,
in Christ and his future, and realize it really isn't uncertain. It's very certain.
He's, yeah,
sovereignty is taking care of it, and he knows all things, and we can be confident in that.
And the old stuff was new at one point, too.
It was, wasn't it?
I don't know if people remember that.
Completely.
Remember when that thing that you're hung on to, when that was new and innovative and nobody,
right,
wanted to do that. You
exactly.
Know?
Totally. One last thing. You and Dan have a little bit in common you don't know about. Jared's at Liberty Manor Baptist Church, which is now called Liberty Baptist Church.
Okay,
I know that, but
okay,
he knew it as Liberty Manor, which sounds good, like a rest home.
Well, that's why we dropped the manor. Because it sounded, and there were some folks resistant. This is before my time.
I know.
When I joined, it was Liberty Baptist, but
right,
I've heard the stories,
yeah,
that there were some older folks that didn't like the idea of changing the name.
Yeah.
And the pastor at the time said, you know, next time you're out to dinner or whatever, ask somebody, what do, mm-hmm, they think?
Yeah.
And, you know, when they hear Liberty Manor, and people said funeral homes, rest homes,
uh-huh,
those, and,
yeah,
and the message sunk in.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So, yeah, but Dan and I, we were at Jewel and have some good friends that were at Liberty Manor.
Okay.
Yeah, Liberty.
That's where
for
I got,
sure,
married.
Oh, that's where,
really,
you got married? I didn't realize,
whoa,
that. Your wife was a member there.
Don,
right?
Weidman married.
Don Weidman married you.
Wow.
And David Ring was saved at Liberty.
Okay.
We don't know David Ring.
I don't think so.
I know. We'll Google him.
Yeah.
Anyway, or maybe not. But that's where.
Speaking of nostalgia.
That's right. So, yeah, I forgot
is
about that.
Is he the lead singer of Ambrosia?
He is the lead,
okay,
singer of Ambrosia.
That's why I don't know.
You don't know how wrong you are, my brother. all kidding aside, the church has gone through some changes and some challenges, and you've been there through all of it. Again, the guys who listen to us, many of those churches have gone through some tremendous changes and tremendous,
yeah,
challenges. Just give them a word of hope of how Christ can be even in the midst of some of the most darkest times in a church's experience.
Well, we've been really contemplating this because over the last couple of years, as you know, Mark, we lost our last lead pastor to moral failing.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, disqualified himself, had to be fired. And so we've been a couple of years now, almost 2 years now, without a lead pastor. We have 8 elders, only one of whom is full-time at this time. And he's our worship guy. You could come 7 weeks in a row and hear a different guy preaching each week. And yet our churches continue to grow. Our new members' classes are full every time. There are people who legitimately have joined the church in the last, you know, however many months or the last year or so, who have no idea about the lead pastor. You know, they couldn't pick him out of a lineup. They,
mm-hmm,
you know, they know the story, but,
mm-hmm,
you know, they don't know who he is. And there was no, you know, being won to his preaching or anything like that. And he was a fantastic preacher. And so we've really contemplated this of like, what are people being won to at our church? And it's been encouraging because they've been won to the sweetness of our fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
And they're won to a kind of preaching. So, you know, different guys with different, you know, approaches, styles, personalities, et cetera. But we all preach Christ from, you know, expository sermons, and
mm-hmm,
people like that kind of preaching. that's encouraging to us because it means you may not have all the things that people expect you are to have. And I had this experience at my last church in Vermont where I went from suburban Nashville, where I planted a church, and had all the stuff people said you're supposed to have mm-hmm. to grow a church, and my church didn't grow. I had a cool name, I had a cool band. It wasn't Ambrosia, but it was close. It was called Element, right? So our church was Element, and it was all young people.
Yeah.
We did cool music, and it was good, and we had a cool space, and people stayed away in droves. And then I moved to Vermont, and I'm in this white steeple church in the least religious state in the nation mm-hmm. on the town green, and mm-hmm. I've got the average age is probably 65, 70, and it's all old people in a band, and we got a pipe organ, and uh-huh. we used it, and we had all the stuff you're not supposed to have, and our church grew mm-hmm. and about tripled in the few years that we were there. And I think the Lord can use – he's not snobby. And so the encouragement I would say to anyone who's just really kind of pushing back against this impulse to live in the golden age is to remember small church, big church, whether it feels easier, whether it feels difficult, the Lord is kind and has committed to build his church. And if we will remain faithful, we know that that can be success, that is success in and of itself. And so whatever I think, you're facing just keep moving forward. Right. Keep loving people. Keep preaching the gospel. And some older people and older churches are hard changers.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not impossible changers, right? If the Holy Spirit's at work. So I think the method of grace is probably where to camp out on.
I would agree. And nostalgia, looking back and trying to recapture the good moments, doesn't move us forward. And looking back and blaming the brokenness of the past for why we can't move forward doesn't help us move forward. So in that terms, looking back as a church, it's okay to visit that. It's okay to visit the nostalgia and the good stuff. It's also okay to visit the difficult, painful things to see how God brought us through that. But you can't use – we say all the time one of the things a dying church has to do is they have to quit making excuses for why they are the way they are.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't say, well, we had a moral failure in our pastor, so I guess we're really broke now, You also can't say, well, our greatest days were in the 1950s and we'll never capture those again. So you can't look nostalgic in a good way or even in a bad way at the past. And you can't – here you go. You ready? My Blackaby moment, all right?
Okay.
I like Richard Blackaby. I like him. By the way, the Blackabys have always – when I lived in Atlanta as a young man at the Home Mission Board, Henry lived in my cul-de-sac. Mentioned a cul-de-sac. So when the guy writes Experiencing God Lives in Your Cul-de-Sac, that's a pretty good deal.
I'm growing nostalgic.
I really am. But what Henry said was, and he's not the only person to say it, but it's really true. Your church can't stay where it is and go where God wants it to go.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to follow him where he wants it to go, and you can't stay right where you are and go where God wants you to go. So you've got to look for the future, look to him. Follow him. And even though in an earlier podcast we unpacked some of your book that you've just written,
Friendship with the Friend of Sinners.
It's right on the tip of my tongue.
It's on the table.
It's right there on the table. when you engage in this amazing friendship with the Friend of Sinners, it encourages you in so many ways, including it gives you confidence for the future. Mm. And because he's going to be with you. As he's been with you in the past, he'll be with you in the future, and we have confidence in that. Thank you for the time you spent with us this morning.
Oh, for sure. Thanks for having me, brother.
And enjoy everything you write, everything you do. You're a blessing to the church. You're a blessing to me, and I'm grateful you're here at Midwestern, and thank you for what you do.
Yeah, thank you, Mark.
All right.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.